answers.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you catch it if I really would, but the feeling in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the wall, and I'd like to give you information, asking for help, but blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome to hour number two, and you are listening to the Common Sense Show. And we come to you live every Sunday evening at this time from 9 p.m. Central to midnight, or that would be 10 p.m. Eastern to 1 a.m. for you night owls. And we really appreciate you staying up late. And if you're happening to catch this on the archive tomorrow because you live east of the Mississippi, I understand. We've got some of the best archive numbers out there. They're going through the roof, and I think last hour is going to be no exception to that, and I think certainly this hour is going to be no exception to that. A lot of you are familiar with my friend and colleague, Joshua Coy. Good talk show host, great sense of humor, command of the issues, runs a great show. I had the privilege of being on with Josh, as you heard, before our show aired this evening. Well, Josh has something in common with Patty Hearst, in that they both have been kidnapped. And I'm saying this with some hyperbole in my voice, but it was no joking matter. Our health reporter, Katie, and I talked to Josh on a couple of occasions, and we were gravely concerned about what was going on, and I was wondering myself if he was going to leave the hospital alive. Well, we're happy to announce that Josh is here with us live and alive, and we're thankful for that. So, Josh, good for you to be on with us, my friend, and I'm glad you're kind of regaining your former picture of health that you have enjoyed. So let's get down to it. How does a talk show host in the largest FM in Alabama, 101 WYDE, and right here on, what is that you called it, Red List Revolution, Red List Radio? How does
Red List Radio.
So how did you get kidnapped? Did they take you at gunpoint? What happened?
No, man, and thank you for that. Fantastic introduction. That was great. That was good stuff. I put that on a promo and play it on my show. I like being called a colleague of Dave Hodges. I'll take that any day. That's pretty good. Just to answer your question. No, I was not captured at gunpoint. It was basically I dialed 911, and just like anybody else would. Since I was a kid, I've always had, and I'm 31. So I've had all kinds of health issues since I was a kid. It's just something you grow up with and you learn to deal with it. You know, I've always worked, and I've always, yeah, I went to college, worked around, you know, your health. You just learn to live around it. So I've been hospitalized several times in my life, but nothing ever like this. There's nothing like this ever happened to me before. And all my past experiences with being hospitalized were nothing like this. But then again, I didn't have a radio show that was constantly irritating the government in one way or another. But all I did was I just called 911. I have blood pressure issues because I have born with kidney problems, and kidneys control your blood pressure. So I always have to take blood pressure medication. And I had had a respiratory virus. I had made it through the whole winter without getting sick. Everybody around me was sick. Best friend sick. Ex-girlfriend sick, brother got sick, mother got sick, everybody, you know, just passing that flu bug around, and I didn't catch it, so I was feeling good and confident, and I think that's what did it. I made it through the winter time, not sick, I'm good, gonna go into the summer, everything's fine, and then all of a sudden, thrown into the hospital. So I dialed 911, and they come to pick me up, And ended up, I thought I was just going to go in and they were going to take me to the ER. I've done that a million times before. You know, run the usual tests they do and tell them what's wrong and send me home with medication, like, you know, good Western medicine does. And that's not what happened. 21 days later, I had to use the word sue, attorney. We're going to have to, you know, seek legal action if you do not release me from this hospital. They were coming up with new ideas to keep me there. They were coming up with a new test they wanted to run to keep me there. And the things that were going on were, they keep you so incredibly doped up when you're in the hospital. And it doesn't matter if you're in pain or not, they're going to give you something. And I was so incredibly narcotized. My mind was just so saturated with all these different drugs that they were giving me. And I don't mean just pain medication. I mean different kinds of medication. They would come in with an entire cup full of pills, literally like 12, and read them out to me. Here, this is what this is, and this is what this is, and you swallow them all down. And when I would, man, it really was hard to concentrate on what was going on. And days would just slip by, and things would go on that I did not catch. And I actually didn't start catching all this and putting it all together, and, you know, we'll get into the details of it, but I didn't start putting it all together until I called you. And, you know, I hadn't talked to you in like a week and a half.
Well, here's what I remember about that first conversation. Yeah, Josh, let me take you back to the beginning. I believe an ambulance transported you to the hospital, and right away, I might have taken it as a clue. Of course, if I'm sick, I might not have, that I could be in some trouble because didn't these people recognize you?
Yeah, that was interesting. I got recognized twice. The first time was in the ambulance, and you really had to be paying attention to catch some of this stuff. And when you're in that state of mind, you're not. You're scared. You know, I mean, you're in the back of an ambulance. You're riding down the road. You know, everything around you is beeping and buzzing, and they're asking you a million different questions, and they're attaching monitors to you, and it's a very confusing moment in your life. And the guy, the paramedic who was asking me all the questions, as I'm answering the questions, he yelled out, just kind of like somebody who recognized me on the street, "You're Joshua Coy." And I said, "Yeah, that's who I am. I listen to your show all the time. We listen to it while we're in the ambulance doing our route. We love your show." "Yeah, I thought I recognized your voice, and I can't believe that's you," and on and on and on. And the guy was a really nice guy. I didn't really start thinking anything of it until the doctor said the same thing. And
this was Dr. Kevorkian from hell, wasn't it?
Indeed it was, yes. Came back just to speak to me. I get there, and the days, like I said, they began to go by very quickly. But the main problem was just I had this respiratory issue, and I had kidney problems, and it was just, you know, you're dealing with medicine. So in the world of Western medicine, the doctor is the one who has all the answers. And we give them this God complex. And I got the king of all doctors with a God complex. I mean, this guy was unprecedented. And this is the first night I'm there. They finally get all of my blood work back. They've got me up in a room. They've admitted me. And I was thinking I was going to go home after leaving. You know, I get there, they're going to fix me, I'm going home. No, I'm now admitted. And the physician who I was introduced to, who was supposed to be over me for the entire time I was going to be there, told me point blank that he knew who I was, and that's how I put it, that I know who you are. And I kind of,
how did he say it to you? Was it demeaning?
Exactly.
Was it threatening?
How
did you take it?
No, that's that's how he took it. I mean, that's how I took it, because that's how he put it. He literally stated, "I know who you are." And I just kind of.
In what context did he deliver? "I know who you are. I know where you live, and I'm going to get you, you so and so." What was that the tone?
No, this guy was incredibly egocentric. He's incredibly egocentric and very self-righteous, and he was the one who had the answers, and I had to pay attention to him, and he was very clear about that. He got everybody out of the room except for me and him, had my family leave the room except for me and him, and we're going to have this conversation between the two of us about what's going to go on while I'm here in the hospital and how it's all for my health and everything's going to be fine if I just do everything I'm instructed to do. And if I don't, I was told that I could just go ahead and go home and die. And I'd never been told that before. So that was a new one on me.
In fact, what I remember you said, and you may not remember this because you were so doped up on their medications, but what you told me was he said to you, if you don't do exactly as I say, you can go home and die for all I care, and you can just go to hospice and be done with
yes.
it. That's what I remember telling me.
That was very clearly stated. That was very clearly stated. That the hospice thing, that was actually repeated in front of my mother, because, you know, when you're in the hospital, your family comes, and they're all freaking out because you're in the hospital. And so I had a family member in the room when it was repeated to me, but the very first time it was stated to me, that's how it was. It was, if you do not want to follow everything that I'm saying, if you question anything that I am laying down for you to do while you're here, then as far as I'm concerned, we can send you home and put you on hospice and you can die. And to me, that opened up a question, because am I that sick? Would you, if you literally let me go home right now, would I die? Is that what you're telling me? I mean, you know, you can't tell someone something like that. My God. What an incredible thing to tell somebody who's obviously shaken up. They've been taken out of their element, been taken out of their home, you know, by a massive van that with flashing lights and screaming sirens, and everybody's freaking out. And now you're, you know, rushed into a hospital. You can't lay that on somebody. And so that's what I was told. I was also told during that same conversation by the same doctor that I'm lucky that I live in America, because if I didn't, if I lived in China or Russia, and this was all to make me understand that I needed to shut up and just do everything I was told, because if I lived in China, if I lived in Russia, if I lived in some other country, when they got my blood work back, they would have just sent me home. I would have not been allowed health care. So enjoy this wonderful thing of, you know, Western medicine, healthcare, and we're going to make sure that you do what we tell you to do. And
you know
from
what my
then
fear
on
was?
In, this was the first day, and I'm telling you, Dave, from then on in, it just got so weird, it gets almost unbelievable.
Let me share with you, after you had dropped out of sight, and I thought, wow, I hope he's okay, and, you know, I know you hadn't been feeling well. And I was real worried, and then I got that text, and then we got to talk briefly, and you called me one morning when I was on the way to work, and I'll tell you what thought crossed my mind, and I did not tell you this, but I brought Katie into the picture because of this. My original thought was they were going to keep you, let you die, and get your organs. I kid you not, that was the first thing I thought of. This was how dire this made you sound. Now, you wanted to leave, didn't you?
Yes. Many times.
And when did you begin? How many days total were you actually in the hospital?
Let's see. I don't want to give the actual date. I mean, the day that I went in. But I'm still wearing the band, so I guess I could read it. Let me see. I have superstition. I always wear the band until the thing falls off. I don't want to cut it off and be like, okay, I'm tempting fate. I know that's a weird thing to say, but I'm superstitious. Let's see, 21 days. 21 days total.
And at what point did you start saying, hey, okay, I'm past the worst, it's time for me to go home and start living my life again?
Well, maybe 14 days. My parents actually, and see, I don't, you know, I have my own home, and so I obviously don't live with my parents, but my parents became incredibly concerned, and because they're not being handed the same handful of pills, they're, you know, very cognizant of their surroundings, and And I have to give them credit because, you know, I'm a Southern Baptist Christian family, and generally speaking, you go to the doctor, you know, everything, you listen to the doctor, he's there to help you. But somewhere down the line around this 14-day period, my parents, I noticed they were showing up and they were staying, and they were staying there constantly, and they weren't leaving. You know, you have visiting hours at a hospital between a certain time of day, and you have to leave. They're very adamant about that. My parents would not leave. After about the 13th or 14th day, they were there constantly. And they were basically being like my advocate. And they had to be in many instances, because now I'm being told I need surgery. And, I mean, the kidney thing, you know, when they tell you that your kidneys are falling apart, it's a scary thing. But I've had that my entire life. I've been told, you know, off and on for years, you're too sick to do what you do. I do because I believe in it, and I believe that the Lord wants me to do it, therefore I do it. But when it, you know, you're lying in this hospital bed and they're telling you need this surgery, or you're going to go completely, you're out of control, your numbers are going to go up too high and you're going to die, you'll do it. And when we met the surgeon, that was when I turned to my dad after this guy, and I'll tell you about this in a minute, but after we met the surgeon, I actually called you after I had met the surgeon. When we had this meeting with the surgeon, and the argument ensued between me, him, and my father, when that argument was over, I looked at my dad and I said, they're going to kill me. We have to get me out of here. And of course, then I called you, and you scared the crap out of me, and made me think that, you know, they're going to do just that. So thanks again for being my pal nowadays. I appreciate it.
Hey, that what are friends for?
Indeed.
Okay, so what did your father say? In fact, did your father ever have any encounters with this Dr. Kevorkian, who threatened to send you home and die if you didn't do what you were told?
We all met this guy, and the first day, because my entire family were there the first day, my mother and father, and so we all met the guy, and I of course told him everything he said when he was, because I'm like, I have to try this out on somebody and see if it sounds right, because this is what he just told me. I got to make sure that this sounds correct. And they were immediately a little bit thrown by it, but you know, again, you're in the hospital, well, do what the doctors say. As the days went by, I could tell we were looking at it a little bit differently. The strangeness of the surgery conversation, though, that was really what set me and set my mind into motion. That and then the incidents that took place before and after the surgery, this is what points to some type of nefarious activity, in my opinion, and scared the hell out of me, and to the point to where, right before they came to get me for the surgery, I literally looked at my dad, and I said, I love you. I got to tell you, I love you. I love you. I love my mom. I love my family. I am thankful. And the reason I'm telling you this is because I don't trust the person that's about to be standing over me with a knife. And you can, you know, say that's a sensationalistic thing to say. After this argument that we had before the surgery, you really don't want to irritate the person who's going to be standing over you when you're completely unconscious. Might not be a good idea. But this is where I started to think something's wrong. You got a minute? Because I can tell you the story before you go to a break.
Yeah, we got a minute. Sure. We got 3 minutes. Okay. 2 minutes before a break.
Okay. All right. This guy comes in the room. And basically, for those of you who never had surgery, they tell you, and they're very clear about it, don't drink or eat before your surgery. The reason they tell you this is, pretty much any surgery, is because you could, when they put you under, you could throw up when you're asleep. And you could literally choke to death while you're asleep. So it's a valid thing to tell somebody not to eat or drink before surgery. So they tell me this. And it's generally 24 hours, they tell you, don't eat or drink before surgery. So I had not. Well, they had, the day previous to the surgery, they had literally done this procedure to where they had screwed up in one shape, fashion, or form. We never could figure out who screwed what up, but the end result of this procedure they were going to do was it dehydrated me to the point of pretty much almost passing out. When I get dehydrated, generally when a human being gets dehydrated, their blood pressure drops. That's just generally what happens. Well, you can have an adverse reaction. I've always had an adverse reaction to dehydration. My adverse reaction, because I have high blood pressure, is the blood pressure skyrockets to a stroke level. When it gets that high, you'll start to shake all over. Your vision will go blurry. I mean, it's very terrifying, because when you have a stroke, obviously, one, you can die from it, but two, if you're a radio show host and you have a stroke, generally, the stroke is the thing that takes away your ability to speak. So that's a scary thing. So we're about 4 hours out of surgery, and they're supposed to be coming to getting me. I have not had anything to eat or drink, but because of their screw-up, they have raised my blood pressure to a point to literally past stroke level, to where I honestly thought I was about to die. I'm shaking all over. I can't see. My vision's gone completely blurry. My hands are shaking. My entire body is shaking all over. So I tell my father, who's in the room with me now constantly, I said, I've got to drink water. If I was at home right now, I would be drinking water. Water would lower my blood pressure, because the blood pressure's up because I'm dehydrated. So I just tell them they're not going to want to operate on me because I've broken their rule, but they screwed up. I'm going to drink the water. They can do the surgery tomorrow for all I care. I don't think I need it anyway. I grab a bottle. I start guzzling. The more that I drink, the lower my blood pressure finally begins to go down. Now I feel a little bit better. It's starting to get a little bit back to normal. And here they come to get me for surgery.
And we're going to hold it right there. This is our cliffhanger point. This is where it gets dangerous, folks. They put him in a state where he could have died from a stroke. They were medically negligent. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about what happened when Josh took steps to basically save his own life, and how they reacted, and what transpired after that. We haven't even covered the worst yet. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the story of the medical kidnapping of Joshua Coy after a word from these sponsors.
Human body is extraordinary. Despite all the stresses we inflict upon it, it still works hard to stay in balance. Thousands upon thousands of people rely upon Heart and Body Extract to help their body stay balanced. This excellent 100% natural herbal formula helps maintain healthy blood pressure levels, cleans arteries, promotes good circulation, balances cholesterol, and more. HB Extract, paired with healthy lifestyle choices like good nutrition and exercise, can give and fear. Recapture your youthful vitality and experience your body healing itself with the aid of HB Extract. It's extremely effective, and it starts working in just days. Visit HBExtract.com to learn more and to read scores of testimonials from satisfied customers. And we've never increased our price in over 10 years. That makes Heart and Body Extract as great a value now as it was the first day we sold it. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Call 866-295-5305 or go to HBExtract.com.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet, this is the Global Star Radio Network.
Hi, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I've created a non-electric self-watering food production system that grows nutritious food with almost no effort and at very little cost. It's called the Food Rising Mini Farm Growbox. And the best part is, I show you how to make your own in do-it-yourself videos on the new website, foodrising.org. There, you'll also find freely downloadable 3D object files that you can use to print the key components of the system on your own 3D printer. It's all part of the open source revolution, where we freely share good ideas that empower people to be more self-reliant and practical in a world that's increasingly unpredictable. This Food Rising Grow system will produce food for you even if the power grid fails, because it has no pumps and no complex moving parts. Join the Food Rising Revolution now at www.foodrising.org.
When you think of getting old, what comes to your mind? Spending the last years of your life in a nursing home? Staring out a window? Medicated to keep you docile? Not able to recognize your own kids? Suffering with some dreaded disease until you die all alone? Well, think again. One of the premier doctors in the world, Dr. James Forsythe, wrote the book, Anti-Aging Cures, Life-Changing Secrets to Reverse the Effects of Aging, your key to the real fountain of youth. And Suzanne Summers, the perpetual face of eternal youth, wrote the foreword. As mentioned in the book, Royal Velvet is the most cost-effective, easiest, and complete way to reverse the effects of aging. It's true. So, do you want glowing skin, less wrinkles, thicker hair, less gray hair, your hormones balanced, improved memory, a toned physique, greater energy, less pain and stiffness, as well as benefits too numerous to name? Go to RoyalVelvetNow.com. Click on the rinse icon in the upper right-hand corner, and within a couple of days, you can be on the path to youthful living. RoyalVelvetNow.com. Your life will never be the same.
The lining of your lungs is supposed to be protected with glutathione to neutralize incoming irritants. In the absence of enough glutathione, your lungs are more prone to irritation. Listen to the real-world results of one man using a powerful glutathione-supporting food.
Hi, my name is Bill O'Brien. I generally suffer through an asthmatic breathing-type situation. My breathing is shallow and generally constricted in the nose and lungs. After consuming One World Away today, I have tremendous energy and also notice my breathing is free. I can feel the air in my left nostril, and it is free all the way to my abdomen, which is pretty remarkable because I rarely get that feeling. Being a singer, I love feeling this unrestricted voice. The only thing new I've actually added to my routine is One World Way. Wow.
Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com. That's one world, W-H-E-Y.com.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
What makes noise? It's ringing in my ear. What makes noise? And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell. And he's not going to take it anymore. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Well, you've heard us talk tonight about an economic collapse with Joseph Meyer. You've heard about the importance here of maintaining good health. You know things are on the dire side in America. You go to my website at thecommonsenseshow.com. You'll read about what I've written about Jade Helm, and none of it is good. It is as Nazi-esque as you can possibly get. So I have a question for you. After all the weeks of me prompting you to go out and get night vision, have you done it? Don't make me come to your house, because things are going to unravel. And yes, I believe in America, and I believe we can put things back together. But in that interim period, do you want to become a statistic? Do you want the bad guy to have the night vision, and he victimizes and terrorizes your family because you didn't see it coming? Or do you want to be ready? And if you want to be ready, I can't. We push these products on this show for a reason. And the reason is because we're preaching about preparedness. You don't hear me selling bubble gum or Cheerios or trips to Disneyland. We're selling things that we think people are going to need. And one of the things that you're going to need is the PVS 14 third generation auto-gated unit. It's the best night vision in the world, and that's what my friend Bob Griswold sells. And I want you to call Bob tomorrow. He's got a lot of goodie gifts for you if you buy this. I mean, he's going to make it worth your while. He's going to give you a discount. And I want you to call Bob tomorrow. He's been in business for 19 years. His number is 1-800-627-3809. 1-800-627-3809. His website is readymaderesources.com. And again, that number is 1-800-627-3809. 3809. Don't make me come to your house. Take care of yourself. Take care of your family. Get your night vision. We're joined by Josh McCoy, medical kidnap victim, and you have not heard the worst yet. You'd think this only happens with children, where parents go to the doctor, don't like what they're told. announce they're going to seek a second opinion, and before they can get out of the hospital, CPS shows up and steals their kids. Yes, that's the most common form of medical kidnapping. Justina Peltier, case in point. But it could happen to you, because if it can happen to Josh, it can happen to any one of us. So, Josh, we were setting the stage here where you had been placed in a very dire physical situation where your blood pressure was approaching stroke levels, and the only way to bring down those levels is to consume water, and that's going to do nothing but tick off the doctor who wants to do the surgery, the one who threatened to send you home and die. Tell me what happened next.
As soon as they come in the room to get me for the surgery, because they still think it's going on, I just began drinking water maybe an hour, maybe it was a couple hours before, because I got just so incredibly afraid. I mean, honestly, you know, when you're faced with something like a stroke, and yes, a stroke can kill you, but again, I don't really fear the death part. I fear the inability to speak for a little while. That scares the hell out of me. Because this is what I do. So, when they come in the room, I have been guzzling water, and finally, it's gotten my blood pressure back down to a normal level. And so I have to tell them, I'm sorry, but we're not going to be able to do the surgery. And here's a little detail to this. This surgeon was not the same doctor that told me I needed to go home and die. Hmm. This is a completely different person who was brought in specifically for this operation. And I didn't find this out till later.
Okay, but this for point of reference, let's refer to the first guy as Dr. Kevorkian, and this guy, this new surgeon, will be FEMA camp doctor number two.
Okay, all right.
Okay, all right.
That'll fit fine. All right. So this guy comes in the room, and he has he has an aide with him. I never got to figure out who that person was, but they come in the room and they're here to carry me down to surgery. And I thought it odd that the surgeon himself, who was about to do this operation, comes into the room before I had surgery before. I never had that happen. I never got to meet the guy the day of, a few minutes before the operation. So I thought that was kind of strange. But anyway, so he comes in the room, and they've got the extra bed that they're about to put me from one bed onto another to carry me downstairs for surgery. So I tell the guy what I've done to get my blood pressure down. I explain to him how this screw up from the day earlier. And by the way, a detail that, again, I because it's just the amount of medication they had put me on, these details, they come and go. And so I've had to write all this down to remember it all, and then go and check back with my parents to make sure that I'm not, this isn't just coming out of my head. They had already twice earlier in the last few days screwed up my medication. I was given the wrong medication, and the only reason that I found out that I was given the wrong medication is because I questioned it. I said, tell me what that is, and then I grabbed the phone and I looked it up. And then I was the one that found out, this is the wrong medication. You're giving me something. I don't know what it is. So, again, a lot of the pills that they were giving me, I honestly knew my meds and the end of it, and I knew what they looked like. I knew what they were. And so when I was given something different or something strange, I was the only one that caught it. So that had already happened a couple of times before, so I was well aware that something strange was going on. And so when this doctor comes in the room, the surgeon, I explain to him what I've done. He tells me, and in front of my father, point blank, I'm a liar. This is not physically possible. So I'm kind of staring at him with a confused look on my face. He says, what's not physically possible? It's not humanly possible. It can't happen. So what can't happen? He said, you can't drink water to bring your blood pressure down. He said, when you're dehydrated, your blood pressure goes low. It doesn't go high. So I don't have a clue what you're talking about. Everything you just told me is impossible. That can't happen. That's exactly what he said. I look over at my father. Dad, you kind of know your son. Let's tell the doctor here what I do every day to keep my blood pressure low. Well, he drinks like 3 liters of water every day, has for 10 years. He just knows what works. You learn what works. He repeats himself. Mr. Coy, this is what I do for a living. This is what we do every day. You're wrong. This can't happen. It's not physically possible. Again, I'm looking over at my dad going, is this really happening? This guy is literally, and my father says, you're basically calling us a liar. You're pretty much just bold-faced liars. We're lying here. Well, I don't know if you're lying. All I know is it's not physically possible. But you've ruined your surgery for today. We can't do it. Everything has to be completely rescheduled. We're not going to be able to do this. I mean, and he just goes on and on about how horrible this is going to be for him. Not for me, but for him. We're going to screw up all these schedules and everything's falling apart. Fine. We'll do it tomorrow. And turns around and leaves the room. Later, I figure out the reason he was so incredibly irritated, the reason that this had really just, I can't express how furious this guy was. The postponement of this surgery was such a big deal, I think, because everything was already set up and ready to go. They already had everything in place. Everything was ready to do whatever was supposed to be done to me. And this person had been specifically brought in for this specific function. And again, this is not something that he does every day. This is not the general surgery that he does every day. It's not a procedure that he does daily. So I honestly don't know what this guy's specialty was or supposed to be. So he leaves the room. I tell my father, we're going to have to write all this down because this is just so absurd. I say, hand me my cell phone, please. I'm going to take 5 minutes out of my day and see if what this guy said is true. So just being a typical American, I Google it. Dehydration causes high blood pressure. Enter. Turns out, the Mayo Clinic, WebMD, Healthline, et cetera, all of them big, bold articles all about how dehydration leads to chronic high blood pressure. The way to bring your blood pressure down is to drink large amounts of water. Now, why would you become so incredibly furious over something so easy to find out about?
Because they wanted to induce a stroke. I mean, let's bring Katie into this discussion. Katie, you became aware of this issue when I shared this with you, and you involved yourself in this. We were talking about this during the break. Share with Josh and with the listening audience what your concerns were.
The one thing I think the story was fresher when we had talked to him. And the thing that disturbed me the most was that he had, 3 or 4 different doctors coming in and telling him different things, different procedures, they were giving him different protocols and orders. And I thought that was very disturbing. So if Josh can expand upon that. That alone is
and that's very true. That's very true. And I had supposedly had these 3 or 4 different doctors, and each one was there for a different reason. But what they would do is one would come in one morning, one would explain to me what's wrong, what they're going to do to fix it, and et cetera, et cetera. This is going to be our procedure for the day. And then a few hours later, the next doctor would come in. I would tell them what the doctor before stated. And I was told on more than one occasion by another physician, that's just ridiculous. What that other doctor said, I completely disagree with that. That's ridiculous. We're going to do this. Then another doctor would come in, and they had no communication between any of them. And that's how it was seeming. Neither one knew what the other one had stated, and then when they found out, they were adamantly against it.
And so where does that leave you as a patient? That's what's so dangerous.
Precisely. And see, when I got to surgery the next day, the day goes by, they've reset everything or whatever. Tell me again, 24 hours, don't drink or eat before our surgery. So I don't. Find out the next morning when they come to get me. Same doctor, the one that I argued with the day before, is the one that's going to be standing over me with a knife. while I'm completely unconscious. Not too happy about that. So they wheel me down to anesthesia to meet the anesthesiologist. This is another strange little detail. The anesthesiologist comes over, and they begin to ask you, are you allergic to anything, et cetera, et cetera, to make sure they don't kill you, supposedly, while you're under. So as he comes over, I could tell that he was just kind of an intern, not somebody who had been doing this a very long time. You could tell this was a young guy. And he comes over and starts flipping through my paperwork because they have your file right in front of your bed. So he's flipping through my files, and he starts pulling these forms out, 1, 2, 3 different forms. And he starts shaking his head as he's reading them. And I'm watching him, and he's looking more and more bewildered as he's reading this stuff. And I said, could you bring me in on what's going on here? Why are you so upset about? And he looks at me, and he threw his hands up in the air, and he said, I don't understand what this is. What? Well, you've got 3 different orders. I said, yeah, I've got, 3 or 4 different doctors. He said, no. You have a surgery order. This is your surgery order. This is what we're supposed to do today. I got this in my hand. You have 3. You have 3 separate forms. And he was very, very adamant about this. I don't understand. No one, I've never seen somebody with 3 separate forms. I said, you've got to explain to me why this is a big deal. He started laughing. This is what we're going to do. This is your form. He said, if I have 3 different orders signed by 3 different doctors for 3 different things to be done during one surgery, he said, that's unheard of. He said, it's one form with every doctor telling me what I'm supposed to do. Here's all everything you're allergic to. Here's all your past history. This is your form. He said, you have 3. I don't know who printed these out. I don't know where they came from. I've never seen them before. But you have 3 separate forms. And he goes over and he tells the head anesthetist. They walk away and they begin to talk about it. And the guy's really upset about this. Again, I'm laying there. They've already given me something. So I'm kind of nervous and worried. And they come back and they say, okay, we don't know why you have 3 different forms. We don't know what's going on, so we're going to have to figure out what's going on. They walk over. Here comes my surgeon. They speak. I can't hear them. The 2 anesthetists completely walk away as though they were told, shut up, leave it alone. He turns around. He goes back. No one ever says anything to me about this again. After the surgery, I asked him, I said, could you open my file? I had befriended a nurse, and I said, could you open my file and see how many forms I had from the surgery yesterday? She did. You have 1, just like everybody else. I didn't get all of this thrown together until I wanted to make sure that this was all true and that this wasn't, again, something that, I'm just making up. This all really happened, and the 3 form thing didn't really seem all that important to me as a patient. To the anesthetist, it was a very important thing. Later on, I have a cousin who's a nurse. She begins to explain to me as well, this is really a big deal. We have 3 separate orders on 1 patient for 1 surgery.
Yeah, that's just incredulous, Josh. It is. It's, I kept thinking the whole time, that first I thought, well, this is an accident, this is incompetence. What happened to my sister when she was being treated for pneumonia and they pulled the tube out and collapsed her lung and she almost died? I thought it was just medical incompetence. But the longer this went on, we started to smell something really dirty. Now, you tried to leave the hospital, so we're running short on time, and I want to jump ahead to that. This might be the most incredible story of them all. When you tried to leave the hospital and you said, I need to leave, I've had enough, this is craziness. Tell us what happened.
I felt I was getting sicker by the day. I felt that the longer that I stayed there, the sicker they were going to make me on paper. I had not been able to speak to any of my other doctors for a few days. All these doctors that I'd met throughout these 21 days, I had not. Everyone did not come in every day, and some of them just disappeared. I never saw them again. Which I thought, again, I've been hospitalized for. I thought that was pretty odd. I had to tell them towards the last couple of days. As I said, my family began to just stay there constantly because they didn't even want me passing out in front of anyone. They wanted to have someone in the room at all times. That's how insane it was getting. We begin to tell the doctors about 3 or 4 days out, we have to go. He feels he's just getting sicker. You guys are making him sicker. He wants to leave now. The first time we breach this subject, they tell us point blank, you can't leave, because if you leave, then you're going to have to sign what they call, you know, an AMA form, which is against medical advice. You sign out against medical advice, is exactly what my family was told, you will not be able to charge this onto your insurance. You will be held accountable, and he's been here for, you know, over 2 weeks. This could be millions of dollars, you know, surgeries and treatments, et cetera, et cetera. And you're going to be on the hook for this. That's what they were told. So they come back in the room and they tell me this, and I'm thinking, well, that's blackmail.
This is the kidnapping part right here. Yeah, this is extortion, and this is where the word kidnapping is not too strong of a term.
No, and again, the next day comes. So we've already been told that, and I got to cut it short. But the next day comes, and we tell them again, okay, we have to leave. What we began to do was we began to dress every day. Every morning we would wake up, and you're always wearing a gown when you're in the hospital. So you're not dressed. And so what we did was every morning we would wake up before the doctors would come in. I would dress. I would put my jeans on and be looking like I'm ready to walk out the door. And they would come in and they would, why are you dressed? Well, I'm ready to leave. You're making me sicker. I want to leave. I no longer trust anything that's going on. I want to leave. Hang on a minute. We'll be right back. They come back about 30 minutes later, and this day they tell me, well, you can't leave because your potassium level's too high. And so we need time to do your blood work and check out your potassium level. So you can't leave because that could give you a heart attack. So we're going to do that, and that's what we'll do today. And then tomorrow you can leave. I said, tomorrow, when you come in here and you tell me something else is wrong and I can't leave, I'm letting you know that I'm walking out the door. The next day comes. Now, what they told me was, when I told them that, oh, well, don't worry. Tomorrow you'll be fine. You can leave. The next day comes. They come walking in. Oh, well, today, when we did that blood work yesterday, we found out that your kidney function is lower than a few days ago. So we're going to have to do a few more tests, but don't worry. You'll be able to leave tomorrow. We eventually got out of there at 11 o'clock at night because we began to kind of put up a stone wall. No one's sticking any more needles in me. They were taking my blood about every 2 hours, Dave, towards the end.
Wow.
Now, in order to do that, they had to stick you every single time. And I've been hospitalized plenty of times. I've never had that much blood taken, ever. Imagine every 2 hours them coming in for more blood. Day after day after day after day.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Incredulous. Let me read to you what one of our colleagues and friends wrote in from Paul Martin, who was kind enough to fill in for me when yours truly had a stomach virus. Paul wrote in and says, he has the mother of all lawsuits. Can you comment on that?
That was the word we had to use in the end. That was, I think, why we got out at 11 o'clock at night. We had to put up a stone wall. No one's touching me. Take all these IVs out of me. No more, nothing. I'm leaving right now, or we're calling an attorney. And that's kind of going to have to become what we're going to have to do.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not the kind of person who lets this kind of stuff go down. And especially if it happens to me, I'm very, very big on the truth, obviously. So the truth has to be heard, and someone's going to have to stand for this, in my opinion. Because I still, honestly, Dave, I don't know. I really don't know what's inside me. The procedures that were done to me, they had to put, you know, implements into me. You have to, you know, I've read all about unnecessary surgeries. I've read all about people in the military who have had things placed in their body when they were under that they did not know. I'm somebody who, for a living, I speak all about the government, truth. I do speaking engagements. I do a radio show. This is what we do. That's my life.
Right, exactly. Listen, I hear you. You mean it may turn out that you can do your own broadcasting without a microphone, because I know they stuck a wire in your leg.
Here again.
It was dangerously close to one of your major arteries, and now it has to come out. I mean, we could go on and on with this story, folks. This is outrageous how they kept him here against his will, blackmailed him, threatened him. Doctor saying, you go home and die for all I care. This is insanity. I can't wait to the day you come back on and you can mention the hospital's name, and we can call these doctors out for the charlatans that they really are. Anyway,
you did
a show last night. You interviewed me, and actually that interview is running. It ran right before I came on tonight, and we're going to post it on the website. Let's talk about how... Well, before we go, because I don't think there's any graceful way to put a cap on this, because this saga is still ongoing. And I'm going to tell you this, Josh. If it had not been for your parents being in the hospital with you and staying there every day and every night, I'm not sure you would have survived. And having said that, because time is short, I know you agree with that, but because time is short, I'd like for you to tell people how they can follow your work, and you got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, sure. You guys, if you want to go, you can go to theradiounderground.com. The name of our show is The Radio Underground. And you can also go and check out 101wybe.com every Saturday night, 9 o'clock Central. And also go to thecommonsenseshow.com.
Yeah, and I had the pleasure of being on Wide Radio and largest FM in Alabama. So we got to tell a whole lot of people about Jade Helm, didn't we?
Indeed. And I'm telling you, people enjoyed that show. They enjoyed it today. Thanks a lot.
Well, I'm glad you got good feedback on it, because it's something that we need to hear, Josh, because I know you share the sentiment. I'm outraged because our government thinks that they can spend our money to do drills to subjugate us, carry out red list executions, dissident extractions, and enforce martial law, and partially use foreign troops to accomplish it. That's what we're uncovering in Jade Helm. It's ridiculous. And we're going to be talking a lot about this in the coming weeks. Josh McCoy, I'm glad you're here, my friend. I'm glad you're broadcasting again. Thanks for being with us here on the Common Sense Show. And I look forward to having you back again at a future date. We got to run.
Thank you.
Everybody else, we will see you in hour number 3. And Katie will be up with the health report. And she's going to be talking to you about healing. We've got to say goodbye temporarily. We'll see you back here in 6 minutes.
On Facebook, on the news, and in conversations with friends, we're bombarded every day with advice on how to be healthier, from gluten-free and non-GMO diets to how much exercise and sleep the body needs. But how much have you heard about alkalizing the body? AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are a holistic pH levels back in balance. Just a few drops in water will help your body rid itself of harmful waste. And even the healthiest of diets can be complemented with your daily use of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Who isn't looking for more vibrance, vigor, and energy? Now buy 2 bottles of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops and get $10 off your order. Visit AlkaVision.com or call 800-518-7615. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are packed with a powerful combination of the most alkaline minerals and compounds. Open the door to greater health, vitality, and zest for life. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health. Call 800-518-7615 or head to AlkaVision.com.